down, I break. I'll have to be careful. If I break too hard, I'll stall in midair and go tumbling. Beside me, Ren breaks away and heads off in Asher's wake. I grit my teeth, then decide not to follow after him for now. Ren had heard Asher's instructions to me. If I'm too obvious about trailing him instead of listening to our captain, he'll know I'm up to something else. The diamond shines brightly over Asher's head. In the center of my vision hovers a transparent, circular map showing 10 dots for where each player happens to be. I nearly lose my balance as another blast of wind hits us. The first ice monument rushes toward me. "Now, Emmy," Asher snaps in our comms. I look at the lightning power-up hovering in the middle of the giant hole in the structure. Then I shift my weight to my back leg. My hoverboard zooms upward. I hunch down until I'm as low on the board as I can go. The change speeds me up, and I rocket toward the marble. I snatch it out of the air as I zip through the hole. My memory of the 3D landscape flashes in my mind. I see the way the structure looks on all sides, the crevices nearest it, and the way the terrain tilts. In a split second, I make a calculation of how this ice structure might topple if I mess with it right now. "Do it," I tell myself. I whip out a stick of dynamite from my belt and slap it onto the side of the structure as I pass through. Then I rush downward. "Get out of the way," I say through our secure feed. Behind me, an explosion shakes the level. Snow and shards of ice fly past me. I cringe and duck down low on my hoverboard. The structure I'd blown groans, the sound echoing across the landscape, and I glance over my shoulder to see it toppling forward toward all of us. The other Phoenix Riders scatter, thanks to my warning. I dart sharply sideways, too, so suddenly that I almost topple out of control. At the same time, I aim the lightning power-up straight at where the demons are clustered. I throw it. Lightning strikes all of them, except for the captain, Jenna, lighting up the space in a flash of brilliant gold. For a single precious second, the demons all freeze. Jenna only gets a chance to glance up at the giant falling shadow before shouting a warning to her teammates. "Move! Move!" But the lightning attack has thrown off the demons. Their players scatter left and right as the structure collapses in an explosion of cracking ice. They barely make it, all except for Darren Kinney, their shield. The falling pillar clips him hard on his shoulder, and he goes spinning wildly out of control, disappearing into the cloud of white. His life bar shrinks to 0%. "Darren Kinney, Team Demon Brigade. Life, -100%. Strikeout, 0 bars. Emeka Chen strikes out Darren Kinney." He regenerates a good 50 yards behind me with a new life bar. "First strike!" The announcer screams in disbelief as the audience goes insane with cheering. "Goes to Emeka Chen!" Hammy whoops joyously over our comms while Ren lets out a curse and Roshan sounds bewildered. Asher's voice finally comes on. "Next time, warn me," he shouts, even as his tone is one of admiration. I'm trying to concentrate on the dizzying landscape that rushes past us. Jenna's artifact hovers glittering and silver over her head. "You're welcome," I shout back. All around us come the screams and cheers from our invisible audience. "I don't believe it," an analyst yells. "Another early move from a wild card in the first game of the season, and what a move it is. She couldn't have picked a more accurate way of toppling that structure toward the demons. We've been underestimating Emeka Chen. This is going to be a fun one, folks." Suddenly, one of the demons sidles up to me, then spins around on his board so that he's facing me. It's Tremaine. My smile vanishes as he lunges for me, slashing me hard in the chest with the blade embedded on his arm guard. My vision blurs scarlet. "Emeka Chen, Team Phoenix Riders. Life, -40%. 13 bars. My hoverboard wobbles as I dart backward, and I nearly lose my balance. Tremaine lunges again. He's so fast that his limbs seem to blur. If he knocks me off my board, I'll go tumbling into oblivion and regenerate behind everyone. I'll be useless for a long time. My hands scramble for the hammer at my belt. Out of nowhere, Roshan appears on my other side right as Tremaine throws another strike at me. Roshan narrows his eyes and brings his forearms up in a bracing cross. The move activates his arm guards. An enormous, glowing blue shield bursts outward from them in a circle, arcing protectively in front of us both. Tremaine's attack hits the shield instead, sending sparks flying everywhere.
"Found your new favorite," he taunts Roshan.
"Don't be so jealous," Roshan says. He uncrosses his arms, letting the shield down for an instant, and lunges at Tremaine with his own fist. A smaller blue shield glows around his moving arm. It hits Tremaine hard enough to make him reel backward, dropping his life bar by 15%. The three of us maneuver down into a valley of snow-covered stone, then weave up to avoid a sharp outcropping of rock. I veer sharply out of the way as Roshan continues to fight with Tremaine, but Tremaine veers with me, determined to knock me down. My recollection of the landscape flies through my head. I use what I remember in order to avoid crashing against a cliff. The analyst is talking so fast now that he can barely catch his breath.
"And the demons send their fighter after Amika. Roshan comes to her aid. If Tremaine catches Amika at this outcropping, she avoids it, barely. It's as if she knows this terrain. Roshan shows us why he's one of the best shields of the games. He's not letting their architect fall, folks. Not if he can help it."
Power-ups zip past us. I eye them until I find what I'm looking for, a speed burst. It's glowing bright yellow and hurtling near me. I take a mighty swerve toward it. My hand reaches out. I barely manage to grab it. I use it right away. The world around me slows as I dash forward. The light in this level is changing. The ice monuments are lit with golden rays and dragging long shadows across the glaciers. The cliffs of blue ice lining our path take on a darker, more ominous color, and the frozen beasts inside them start to look alive. From the corner of my vision, they seem to stir. It takes me a moment to realize that the sun is setting. If this keeps up, we are going to need some power-ups that light our way. I look forward, searching for Ren. Asher has handed off our artifact to Hammy, who zips ahead of us all. Now Asher and Ren team up as they swerve toward Jenna, who is sandwiched on both sides by Tremaine and Ziggy.
"It looks like we're heading for our first showdown between the captains," the announcer shouts.
Jenna sees Asher's move. She ducks low on her hoverboard and dives. Her teammates dive with her. They tumble until they look like they're going to crash into the ground, and then suddenly pull up so that they're skimming right above the glacier. Asher and Ren dive down too. Plumes of snow whip up as they zoom by. I turn my board higher, trying to protect myself from all the flying snow. Ahead of me, Hammy whips her own board up sharply enough to veer herself off to the right. Her movements are so quick that I can barely keep track of her. She snags another power-up, a bright blue one, and then does a dizzying spin on her board to grab a third. She's inching her way over to Tremaine. I look back down at the crew skimming along the glacier's surface. There are enough formations between here and the horizon for me to trap them in, if I can do it right. Tremaine is probably thinking the same thing. I point my hoverboard down and follow them, low against the ground.
"Emmy," Asher says into my secure comms. "Archway ahead. Blow it up."
"Got it."
"Ren and I will veer off at the last second. Go around behind Jenna. When she and her team try to avoid the rubble in front of them, we'll catch them from the back and take her artifact."
I nod, even though I know Asher can't see me.
"I'll knock it out before they can say..."
My words die as an enormous shape explodes out of the ice cliffs lining our path. It looks like a prehistoric polar bear, except as tall as a skyscraper,
and its jaws are wide open, revealing a row of sharp teeth, each one as long as the nearest towering ice structure. Its eyes glow scarlet. It lets out an earth-shaking roar, then lunges toward the closest player. The closest player is me. My limbs go into auto-drive. I slam my back foot down on the gas. At the same time, I swivel my hoverboard so sharply to my left that I spin 180 degrees. My board shoots me back in the direction I came. The bear's mouth yawns on either side of me. Its jaws start to close just a little farther. I shoot out of the beast's mouth at the same time its jaws close, and the accompanying blast of wind sends me tumbling forward. The bear's front paws land heavily, shaking the world. Through the dust, Roshan appears and hurtles toward me, as if he were going to ram right into me. I throw my arms up instinctively, then I veer sideways in a desperate attempt to save myself. We narrowly avoid a collision. As he passes me, he grabs my arm and zooms upward as the bear lunges up for us again. Before I can protest, he puts all his strength into flinging me high, and I find myself sailing up toward the arch that still looms ahead. Below me, the bear's jaws snap shut on Roshan. Roshan Ahmadi, Team Phoenix Riders. Life minus 100%. Strikeout. 0 bars. Nearby, another enormous beast explodes out of the ice cliffs. A one-eyed white wolf. Players scatter left and right as it swings its head around, jaws chomping. It catches Ziggy. She vanishes in its mouth, regenerating 50 yards away along with Roshan. Ren wobbles on his board and spins out of control as he tries to avoid the wolf's gaping mouth. This is my chance to get him. I turn my board in a sharp arc, then hurtle toward Ren. He sees me coming a split second before I ram hard into him, sending both of us careening away from the wolf. I grab for his wrist until my hand finally closes around it. The noose activates. I see it glow gold in my view, then disappear. A blue glow flashes around Ren before vanishing. An instant later, a file from him pops into my view. I grin. Broke through. "Get off me," Ren snaps, trying to yank himself free. His move sends us both tumbling off our boards and into the white land below. Everything goes bright in my view. And an instant later, I've regenerated a pace behind the others. "And both rider wildcards are struck out by a rookie mistake," the analyst shouts. Ren shoots me a dirty look from where he's regenerated several yards away from me. Asher scolds me over our line, but I don't care. I've laid Hideo's trap. My focus turns away from Ren and back to the game. I hunt madly for a sight of my teammates on my map. Finally, I glimpse Asher and Hammy hovering near the center to the archway, flying in tight circles as they are trapped in by two other beasts. Some demons are heading their way, too. I yank out my dynamite and zoom toward the top of the archway. As I reach it, I slap a stick of dynamite to the top of the ice structure. Then I pivot down and dart away right as it goes off. Another earth-shattering explosion. The impact shakes my board violently, and snow flies all around me, making me squint. I'm down to my last dynamite. Behind me, through the dust, Ren materializes with Asher and Hammy on his tail. Our artifact still hovers over Hammy's head. I call to her, then toss her my hammer from my utility belt. Her hand shoots out, and she catches it without even turning around, then winks at me and thanks over her shoulder. As she hurtles away from the nearest beast, she throws the hammer at its eye as hard as she can. It hits true, making the beast flinch away with a roar. The demons are above us, looking down. They have the advantage now, and they know it. Even from here, I can tell that Jenna has a grin on her face. She still has their artifact, and it hovers over her head, silver and shining. Her lips move as she gives instructions to her team. "Hams, Asher says through our comms as we all continue to hurtle through the darkening landscape.
Give me the artifact. Turn off your hoverboard's lights.
His eyes are locked on Jenna. And get hers. Hammy winks at Asher as she transfers our artifact to him. In the twilight, both our artifact and our opponents glow with a noticeable blue halo.
Yes, sir.
Roshan, back her up. Ren, cut them off. And Emmy?
But I never get to hear what Asher wants me to do. An explosion goes off right above a monument near us, rocketing us all apart. Tremaine had thrown a stick of dynamite near us. A blur of light streaks past us and rams right into Ren, sending both of them tumbling.
It's Max.
Ren lets out an angry snarl and flings the other fighter off him. At the same time, Hammy hurtles out of sight, her hoverboard nothing more than her engine's bright red sparks of fire propelling her forward. I don't have time to think about where she's going, because in the next instant, Jenna comes rocketing down toward us with Darren and Ziggy at her sides.
She's headed straight for Asher.
Asher bares his teeth and laughs, then rushes up to greet her. My eyes flicker to the glacier's ice below us. Along the cliffs, a white dragon is stirring to life, its movements cracking the ice that encases it. I narrow my eyes. If I can just gain control of that dragon. My hands go to the length of rope dangling at my waist, and as Asher and Ren attack the demons, I dart toward the surface and slow my board down near the dragon. As I dive, I notice lights following closely behind me. Somebody's hoverboard is skimming the ground in the darkness. It's Tremaine, and he's closing on me fast. I only have time to look up once before he barrels into me. We both tumble straight into the glacier's surface. The impact knocks us clear off our boards. The world around me tumbles, and all I can see is flying snow and evening sky. Then, everything blinks out. The next instant, both Tremaine and I have struck out and regenerated a full pace behind the others. Tremaine turns a murderous look on me. My speed burst power-up from Hammy is still in my inventory, and now I use it. It disappears from my hand in a flash of light. The world rushes forward, and I can almost feel the blast of wind against my skin. Right as I yank out my own length of rope, the dragon finally breaks free from the ice. Its gaping mouth roars to the surface. I fling my rope, aiming to lasso the tip of its nose. One try, then another. On my third, I manage to swing the loop across the creature's snout. The dragon pivots its head in my direction, then lets out a furious shriek. A column of fire bursts from its open jaws. I use the momentum from the rope to swing onto its head. My rope becomes a makeshift harness. Below me, Asher and Max are locked in battle.
Move back, I say into my comms.
Asher's eyes flicker briefly at me. It's all the warning he needs. I yank the dragon's head down as Asher suddenly breaks free and darts away. The creature shrieks in rage, then lunges at Jenna, the nearest player. All she can do is throw her hands up before the creature swallows her in one bite.
Jenna McNeil, Team Demon Brigade. Life minus 100%. Strikeout. 0 bars.
The audience bursts into excited chaos. I can barely even hear the announcer's voice over it all. A pace behind us, Jenna blinks back into existence. Asher is already waiting for her. In a flash, he pounces right as Jenna materializes. Before she can get a handle on what's happening, Asher's hand closes on the artifact hovering over her head. Game over. The world is engulfed in scarlet and gold as an enormous phoenix bursts into flames across the entire sky. The audience explodes in wild cheers.
I don't believe it!
The analysts are yelling over the chaos, their voices cracking from excitement.
It's all over! Jenna McNeil and the Unstoppable Demon Brigade, taken down by the Phoenix Riders in the most stunning upset we've ever seen. Oh my god! The Phoenix Riders win!
Asher throws his head back, lets out a piercing whoop, and raises his fist in the air. And that's when I see the black figure again. He's standing on top of the ice monument, clad in the same fitted black armor I'd seen on him in the Dark World. Zero. A chill rushes through me. Why can I see him? Why is he here? The world around us pauses. The dragon I'm struggling to control suddenly stops in midair, frozen, and then fades from view. The landscape darkens into blackness. I blink as the Tokyo Dome itself comes back into view, as well as 50,000 spectators screaming wildly at the top of their lungs. To either side of me, my teammates come out of their booths.
That was the most badass move I've ever seen, Roshan exclaims, reaching me first and clapping me hard on my back.
I open my mouth to thank him for protecting me, but Hammy hurls herself at me, smothering me and Roshan in a hug. I'm drowned out by the rest of our team piling on top of us. They crush me in, tangled and laughing. Blood roars in my ears. On the other side of the arena, the demons are shouting at one another, and Tremaine is stalking away from Jenna, without so much as looking up at the audience. My first official win in a championship game. But all I can think about is that Zero was there. I saw him. I search for Ren. He is smiling and laughing too, but his expressions are off, forced. The smile doesn't touch his eyes. He glances over his shoulder as if he's seen something the others didn't. Then the tension breaks, and he goes back to grinning and hugging the others. He'd also seen the figure. As I continue to cheer, I bring up the file that I'd managed to grab through Ren's broken shields. There's little there, as if I had pulled away before I could properly seize the data from him. But it did manage to grab something. Possibly something Zero was communicating to Ren. The name of a program. Proj_ICE_HT1.0. What? I frown at it, my thoughts racing, trying to make sense of the name. Proj_ICE. Project ICE? Does it have something to do with this white world level? HT. HT? Hideo Tanaka. Project ICE Hideo Tanaka. It could be a file connecting Hideo with this opening game level, right? Or... Then, my heart skips in terror as I connect another meaning to the word ICE. Oh my god. Zero wants to assassinate Hideo. And at that moment, every light in the stadium goes out. Chapter 20. The stadium plunges into darkness. Startled shouts come from the audience. Over the chaos, the announcers try to maintain some semblance of order.
Everyone stay in your seats, one says, still cheerful. It looks like we have a temporary malfunction, but it will soon be fixed.
I stare through the pitch black at a red error message flashing in my view. Incorrect user access. The file that it activated now flashes once, then blinks out of existence as it self-destructs. I'm left staring at an empty shell, the only part that's left of what the in-game object had retrieved. The file had been meant to destroy itself if the wrong user ever got her hands on it. Was the reason why Zero chose to keep messing with levels in Warcross because he has been passing information to his followers this way? And if that was true, who else in the games works for Zero? But none of that matters at this very instance. While Hideo and I were racing to unlock data from Ren, Zero had been busy too, glitching the arena itself. He had cut the power. The security doors up in the balcony seats don't work right now. The realization hits me so hard that I can barely breathe. I place a call immediately to Hideo. Get out of there, I say in a rush the instant the call goes through. Your life's in danger right now. Get... I don't even finish my sentence before I see a spark of light up in the balcony seats. It flashes once, twice, and then the blackness returns. People in the audience glance toward it, puzzled, but I know what it must have been. Gunshots. Hideo? Hideo! I say as I try to reconnect my call, but it doesn't go through. I curse as I fumble my way through the darkness. The security teams have taken out flashlights, and thin rays of light float around the arena, cutting through the black. The Neuralink's connection also seems to have gone down, making it so that no one can bring up a virtual grid in their view to see where they're going. I recall the stadium's layout from my own memory. And before anyone can come up to me and stop me, I dart away from my station and hurry through the darkness, relying on what I remember to navigate through the space. People protest as I bump past them. It seems like an eternity before I finally find my way to the stairs. I hop blindly up two at a time. As I go, I try to message Hideo. No response. As I reach the second landing, red emergency lights flood the arena. Even though they're technically dim, I squint against them after the pitch blackness. Security cams blink on overhead. The Neuralink comes back online, my profile rebooting in the corner of my view. The announcers' voices ring out reassuringly as they try to organize the audience. Watch your steps, folks. The audience doesn't seem to realize that there was a gunman in here. I reach the security box at the same time as I see Hideo's bodyguards clustered around the area. My eyes hunt frantically for Hideo's familiar face. I nearly collapse in relief as I see Hideo crouched down in the security box room, surrounded by his bodyguards and colleagues. He looks unharmed. Beside him, Ken is speaking rapidly to several of the guards in a low, angry voice. What the hell happened? I say as I hurry over. Where's the shooter? Ken recognizes me and gives me a grim look. The security cams up here were looping old footage. Security's swarming to try to catch the shooter. I turn my attention to what Hideo is doing. One of his bodyguards is on the ground, clutching his shoulder and grimacing. Blood stains his hands. I recognize him as one of Hideo's faithful, ever-present shadows that I've seen go everywhere with him. Hideo's face is clouded with concern, his eyes opaque with that deep, dark fury I'd seen before in his memory. He's saying something quietly to the hurt guard, who shakes his head and struggles to push himself to a sitting position. Beside him, one of the other bodyguards shakes his head as he listens to something on an earpiece. The police outside couldn't keep up with him, sir, he says. Hideo doesn't look away from the injured man. Keep searching. His voice is frighteningly quiet. The bodyguard shifts. They're saying they lost him in the empty parking structure. Then tear it apart until you find him, Hideo snaps. The bodyguard doesn't hesitate this time. When Hideo glances up at him with a raised eyebrow, the man bows his head quickly. Yes, sir. He heads out with two of the others. You shouldn't be here, Ken says to Hideo in a low voice. For the last time, I'll handle things in the arena. Go home. I can handle this just fine. You do realize someone just tried to kill you, right? Ken snaps back. This isn't just some bug in the game. This is your life we're talking about here. And I'm no less alive now than I was before the attack. Hideo gives his friend a firm stare. I will be fine. We'll talk tomorrow. This sounds like an old argument that Ken has never succeeded in winning, and it occurs to me that this probably isn't the first time Hideo's life has been threatened. Ken makes an irritated sound and throws up his hands. It's not like he used to listen to me at uni either. Hideo straightens when he sees me. If it hadn't been for your call moments earlier, he says, I would be the one lying on the ground. A chill runs through me. In a single moment, my job has transformed from a thrilling chase
to something much more ominous. I thought I'd been getting closer, making progress. Instead, I'd stumbled upon something even worse. Had any of the other bounty hunters seen what just happened? I look back to the blood on the bodyguard's shoulder. There's a faint metallic scent in the air. Hints of my old panic. The familiar desperation to solve this problem rises in my stomach. Everything has a solution. Why can't I find this one? Hideo helps his injured bodyguard stand and talks to him in a low voice as another of his men drapes a black blazer over the bleeding shoulder, covering it from view. Whatever Hideo had murmured was too quiet for my translator to pick up, but it does make the injured man give him a grateful look. "Keep this under wraps," Hideo says, eyeing us all. "The attack failed. We're tracking the suspect. No need to panic the crowds." "Hideo," I start to say, but stop at the look on his face. "Go to your team," he says gently. "Continue your celebrations. We'll talk later tonight."
"And you're going someplace safe?"
He nods as the bodyguards take over for their hurt friend, then watches as they lead him to a set of private stairs. All I can do is stare. Hideo's shoulders are straight, and his posture is calm. But his eyes are tense, far away from here. His hands clench and unclench at his sides. Even if he doesn't show it blatantly, I can sense that he's shaken. Ken finds my gaze and holds it for a moment. "Talk to him," he seems to say. I can sense the silent plea from him, a friend who knows Hideo well enough to know how difficult he can be. "Hideo," I say softly, "you need to get out of here. Out of Tokyo. Someplace where you can keep a low profile." The lights in the stadium finally turn on, illuminating the space with blinding brightness. I blink away stars. Down below, the crowd murmurs in half-hearted confusion as they continue making their way toward the exits, but it is quickly replaced by cheering again as they celebrate the game. No one knows what just happened. Through the speakers, the security is reassuring the crowd, saying, "A transistor sparked in the upper levels of the dome, but everything is under control now. Please mind your steps and follow the exit signs." As the people funnel out, Hideo turns to look at me. His eyes are still that dark color, and the look in them is furious, cold, determined. "I'm not going anywhere," he says. Then he turns away with his bodyguards. Chapter 21. If I thought the amount of publicity I'd gotten so far was overwhelming, it was nothing compared to after our first win. We'd barely made it out of the Tokyo Dome when the first enormous broadcasts appear on the sides of the buildings surrounding the arena, the headlines in giant screaming letters. "Asher Wing, first draft Amika Chen, lead Phoenix Riders to stunning upset win." A recap of me plays over and over beneath each of these headlines, my rainbow hair flying in the wind, my figure crouched on the head of a towering creature, lassoing its head, forcing it down toward Penn. Above the dome, the two crests, the Phoenix and the Hooded Demons, suspended over the building have now morphed into only our Phoenix. Its flaming wings spread as wide as the dome, its head arching up to the sky in triumph. My level has skyrocketed from 28 to 49. But all I can think about is that Hideo could have died tonight, and that no one knows. My thoughts continue to churn, looping back over and over on Ken's words. "He will listen to you, please." What is Hideo saying about me that makes Ken think this? A mob of reporters descend on our bodyguards as we flee the arena toward our waiting cars, and suddenly, I can't see anything but a field of flashing lights and microphones. "No training tonight," Asher exclaims as we finally reach our waiting limousine and all climb in. The others cheer as he gives the car an instruction to take us into Shibuya, instead of back to our dorms. Behind our car, a team of bodyguards climb into a second car and follow us. Reporters and vans linger in traffic nearby, tailing us. My mind stays on Ren, and instead of looking up and grinning at the reporters outside the window, like Asher's doing, I keep my eye on where Ren's clapping Roshan on the shoulder. A message blinks on in my view. It's Ken. Can you get away tonight? To go to Hideo? He's not even listening to you. He never listens to me. Not when he's got an idea planted in his mind. But I'm not his bounty hunter. And more specifically, I'm not you. Why would he listen to me? I can almost feel Ken's frustration as he answers. I can count on one hand the number of people he fully trusts. But he talks to you frequently. He takes you to dinner unannounced. I'm not his bodyguard. I can't force him to protect himself. You're his hunter. He has hired you to tell him what he needs to know. You have a right to insist on his safety. He won't shut his door on you. I glance up from our conversation as my teammates roar with laughter about something. Tonight's our celebration night, and they'll expect me to be just as excited about our win. If I leave too soon, they'll be poking and prying in no time, and Ren will suspect something's up. Hey, Hammy says to me, and I look up to see her curious expression, her cheeks still flushed from victory. You okay? It's strange to me that no one else in the stadium knows what happened, that they must really think the two sparks of light in the balcony seating were blown transistors instead of gunfire. I must be wearing all of my anxiety on my face right now. I give her a brilliant smile that I hope looks convincing, and then shake my head. I'm fantastic, just still in shock. Hammy grins and pumps a fist in the air. It nearly hits the limo's ceiling. Karaoke, baby! She shouts, and the others all shout along with her. I do as well, cheering as loudly as I can in order to drown out the storm of thoughts brewing in my head. I do it so forcefully that I almost believe it. Soon, we've settled in a karaoke bar in the heart of the Roppongi district, with men in black suits guarding every entrance and exit. The halls are lined with floor-to-ceiling mirrors, reflecting the light of chandeliers adorning the ceilings, while the doorways to each private karaoke room are painted in glittering gold. Outside each doorway stand virtual figures of smiling supermodels, congratulating each of us by name as we walk past. I stare down the hallway, memorizing a path out before we enter our own private room. In here, the music has already been turned up to deafening levels. Ren laughs as he scrolls through the song list with Roshan. Every time they rotate onto a new track, our room transforms to match it. My Heart Will Go On changes the room into the bow of the Titanic, while Thriller surrounds us with dancing leather-clad zombies on a dark street. Roshan, usually reserved, can't help laughing as Ren says something in French while mimicking the Thriller shuffle. I watch Ren from the corner of my eyes as I sit sandwiched between Hammy and Asher. Had no one else noticed his expression as the game ended? Even now, there is something tense about his posture, as if things tonight hadn't gone as well for him as they had for the rest of our team. To Roshan! Hammy yells, startling me from my thoughts. Most valuable kicking Tremaine's ass player! Roshan sobers a little at the mention of Tremaine, but he hides it behind a smile. To Hams, he calls back. Thief of 1,000 power-ups. To Amika, Asher exclaims. His cheeks are flushed, pushed up by a huge grin. He shakes his head. Girl, you put the wild in wild card. To Amika. To Amika. The cheers flow fast. I need to sneak out, I think as I laugh along. It might be my overactive imagination, but Ren's smile seems tighter than everyone else's, his happiness for me strained. It doesn't take long for the chaos in the room to reach a peak. Asher leans heavily against Hammy, repeatedly telling her that he loves her. She is whispering into his ear in return. The karaoke microphone squeals in protest as Ren yells an off-key note into it. Roshan winces at the sound. As everyone bursts into another storm of laughter, I grab my phone and text Hideo. Where are you now? A few seconds pass with no response. Maybe Ken put too much faith in me, or too little faith in Hideo's stubbornness. I bite my lip, then send a second message. I have more info for you. Best to talk in person. It's an emergency. Info from his hunter. It's the only thing I can think of to say that might get him to see me. More time drags on. Just when I'm starting to think Ken has gotten it all wrong about me, an encrypted message appears. I confirm my identity to unlock it, and in return, an address pops up in my view. Hideo's address. I almost sag in relief. Then I store the location in my GPS and delete the message. Beside me, Asher raises his voice.
Anyone want to play a shots game? We need the waiter to come back.
I hop to my feet. I'll go find him, I say. Then make a beeline for the door. Perfect. By the time the waiter gets to them, they'll be so busy having fun that none of them will notice I've left. Plenty of time for me to come up with a good excuse. I exit the room and hurry down the hall. As I go, I bring up my map with Hideo's current location. His gold dot pops up somewhere in the northern area of the city. I hurry down a side corridor. Moments later, the hall leads me out into the narrow back alley behind the building and near its garbage bins. A cold drizzle has dampened the sidewalk, and as I step outside, I'm hit with a blast of chilly night air. Neon lights reflect against the wetness, painting the ground a menagerie of smeared gold, green, and blue. The city block's number, 16, hovers in bright yellow letters over the pavement, while a gold dotted line leads from where I stand to the corner of the block, where it turns right and disappears from view. A cheerful start message and an estimated arrival time hover in the center of my vision, waiting for me to follow the map. 30 minutes. I shiver, draw my hoodie tightly up so that it covers all of my hair, and pull on a black face mask. I also download a virtual face to disguise myself. Anyone on the street who's logged into the Neuralink should now see me as a complete stranger instead of a face they recognize from the news. Better than no disguise. Then I throw my electric skateboard down and jump on it. It shoots me forward as I follow the gold line. Half an hour later, I emerge in a quiet upper-class neighborhood on a hill overlooking the city. The travel time shifts in my view as I go, counting down the minutes that it will take for me to arrive. The drizzle has turned into a steady rain now, soaking through my hoodie and drenching my hair. I try to stop myself from trembling. Finally, I'm here. The gold-dotted line stops in front of the gates of a warm, well-lit estate, with a curved wall and carved lions outside its doorway. I don't know how much security Hideo usually has at his residences, but tonight, at least 5 cars are sitting here, and 2 bodyguards are at the front gate, waiting to greet me. Others look like they're scattered around the estate. One of them approaches me now, then tells me to hold out my arms. I turn off my virtual face and do as he says. He pats me down thoroughly, pausing to inspect my board. When he's satisfied, he holds out an umbrella for me as I hurry to the entrance. It's okay. I don't need the umbrella anymore, I tell the man. When he eyes me sideways, as if he never gets this order, I gesture to my soaking clothes. Seriously. He reluctantly puts it down, and we walk in silence for a moment before reaching the front entrance. Inside the house, I hear a dog barking. Hideo answers the door. His bodyguard blinks in surprise, as if this is not something Hideo does often. He's still dressed in his clothes from earlier, but one sleeve of his shirt is pushed up to his elbows while he's undoing the cufflink on his other sleeve. His collar is flipped up, the top buttons open, and his black tie is draped loosely over his shoulders. His hair is damp with a few drops of rain, the silver streak shining white. He looks concerned and bewildered, a sudden startling reminder to me of just how young he is. It's so easy to forget. "You're soaking wet," he says. "And you're alive," I reply. "That's good." The bodyguard leaves us alone. Hideo opens the door wide and ushers me inside. Beside him trots a fat, orange and white dog with short legs and enormous fox ears. It stops in front of me, wags its stubby tail, and looks up at me with a panting smile. I pet it vigorously, then remove my wet shoes near the doorway and step inside. The home is impeccably clean, with soaring ceilings and beautiful modern furniture. Soft music plays from some sort of built-in sound system. To my surprise, I see no virtual letters, colors, or numbers anywhere in the house. Everything is real. How much does a house as gorgeous as this cost in a city as expensive as Tokyo? "You're trembling," he says now. I shrug it off. "Just get me out of these clothes." Then I realize what I've said and heat rushes to my cheeks. I mean, well, not that. The edges of Hideo's lips twitch with a smile, a brief respite from his grave look, and he nods for me to follow him. "I'll bring some dry clothes for you." I got a glimpse of a single file from Ren, I tell Hideo as we head down the hall. Then I mention its name. It's obvious that Zero wanted to, well, try an assassination today. "How's your bodyguard doing?" "He'll live. There have been worse attacks than today." "Worse attacks? Any word on the culprit?" Hideo shakes his head as he pushes his second sleeve up to his elbow. He's weary, his dark mood still not lifted. "Ken says the power had been thoroughly cut. In all the confusion, whomever it was managed to get away and blend in with the crowds. We'll be studying every nook and cranny of the dome for evidence. But I won't lie. They were ready." The culprit is still out there. I try to swallow my fear. Just because nothing happened today doesn't mean Zero's not waiting in the wings to act. It could be one part of his grand plan. I take a deep breath. They're going to try again. They could have been trying even before this, and there will be plenty of times when you won't be as guarded as you were in the dome. Hideo's lips tighten slightly, but it's the only response he gives about his safety. He stops for a moment to look at me. "Did it report any data back about you?" I hesitate. I hadn't thought about the possibility of Zero grabbing info of me from the object, and the idea sends a shiver through me, even as I warm at Hideo's obvious concern. "Shouldn't be possible," I reply. "I'm fine. Besides, it's not me that we should be worried about. The more pieces of this that I find, the more ominous it sounds. My security detail is used to being careful. After your warning, we did a full sweep of my home. They'll be watchful." "That's not what I mean. Hideo, you almost died tonight. You realize that, don't you?"
"I'm well protected here. There are 8 bodyguards on my premises alone."
He nods toward the rest of the house.
"It sounds like you're edging closer and closer to finishing this at any rate."
"I don't understand how you can be so calm about this," I say, my frustration rising. No wonder Ken sounded so exasperated. "You need to get out of Tokyo. It isn't safe for you here. Every moment you stay puts you in danger." Hideo casts a serious look my way.
"I'm not going to be chased out of my city by a vague threat," he replies.
For the first time since I've known him,
A note of anger creeps into his voice. This isn't the first time someone has targeted me, and it won't be the last. I'm about to raise my voice, but then I sneeze. The cool air in the house is seeping straight into my soaked clothes, and I realize that my teeth are chattering. Hideo tightens his lips. We'll continue this after you warm up. Come with me. We reach a spacious bedroom, its glass walls leading out into a serene Zen garden adorned with golden dangling lights. A large bathroom suite branches off from one side of the room. Take your time, Hideo says, nodding toward the suite. When you're ready, we'll talk further. Would you like tea? A nice cup of tea after your assassination attempt, sure. I nod, too cold to argue. I'd love some. Hideo closes the bedroom door and leaves me alone. I let out a long, slow breath. So far, I'm not doing a very good job of convincing him of the real danger he's in. I sigh and strip off my hoodie, jeans, and undergarments, laying all the clothes out carefully along the bathtub to dry. My reflection in the mirror catches my eye. My makeup from the tournament earlier now looks smeared and smoky, dampened by the rain, and my hair hangs in wet strands of color. No wonder Hideo isn't listening to my advice. I look half crazy. My gaze wanders from myself to the rest of the bathroom. The shower is enormous, with a rain shower head installed right into the ceiling. I turn the faucet and let the hot water steam for a bit, then step inside. The shower washes away some of my jumbled thoughts, and by the time I step out, I feel a little calmer about being here. I towel myself off and weave my wet hair into two messy side braids, then step out of the bathroom. A set of clean clothes has already been laid out for me. A creamy white sweater, a pair of loose pajama pants. I pull the sweater on. It smells just like Hideo, and is so large on me that it hangs down almost to my knees. The collar slides sideways, baring one of my shoulders. I don't even try to wear the pajama pants. They're far too long. I walk over to the bedroom door, open it, and emerge halfway out into the hallway to tell him I need something shorter. But he's already here, holding a teacup in one hand and ready to knock on the door with his other. Emmy, he starts to say, when he sees me. We both freeze. Hideo blinks. His eyes dart to the loose white sweater I'm wearing, then quickly away. I wanted to ask if you had a tea preference, he says. My shoulder and legs suddenly feel very exposed, and the flush on my cheeks now turns to magma-level red. I start to stumble some words out. Sorry, I was going to ask if you, had smaller pants. Another bad line. I mean, not that you have small pants that would fit me. Digging a deeper hole for myself. I mean, the pajama pants keep falling off. I'm a very good digger. I wince, then shake my head and stop talking, letting my hands wheel in circles as if they can convey my meaning. Hideo laughs a little. Unless my imagination is messing with me, a slight flush colors his cheeks too. I snap out of my reverie, then slam the door shut right in his face. There's a pause, followed by Hideo's familiar voice. Sorry about that, he says. I'll find something better for you. Then his footsteps echo down the hall. I walk over to the bed, bury my face in the sheets, and let out a groan. Moments later, Hideo opens the door a crack and waves a pair of shorts blindly at me. I take them. They're so baggy on me, but at least they stay on. I venture out into the hall and into the living room, where Hideo is reading by a crackling fireplace. His dog lies at his feet, snoring softly. The windows here lead out to the garden, and the bead-like pattern of rain can be heard against the glass. The walls are lined with portraits and with shelves of books, pristine early editions,
neatly organized and artfully arranged. Then there are shelves displaying vintage video games and consoles, as well as prototypes of what look like the earliest versions of the Neuralink glasses. Some of them are as large as bricks, but each one gets progressively smaller and lighter, until I finally see the first edition of the official glasses propped up at the end of the shelves. Hideo looks up from his book when he hears me approach, then notices me studying his shelves.
"My mother took good care of my early Neuralink prototypes," he says. "She and my father made sure to save them."
His neuroscientist mother and computer repair shop father. "Mint condition," I reply, admiring the prototypes.
"They believe that objects have souls. The more love you put into one, the more beautiful it becomes."
I smile at the affection in his voice. "They must be very proud of what you created." Hideo just shrugs, but he looks pleased at my words. "You don't have any augmented reality overlaid in your home," I say as I sit. Hideo shakes his head.
"I like to keep my home real. It's too easy to lose yourself in an illusion," he replies, nodding at his physical book. "Sometimes reality is better." Hideo's words from our last dinner come back to me now. I'm very aware of our proximity to each other, as if I could feel the ghost of his presence against my skin. I take a deep breath.
"Do you have any enemies you can think of? Someone who would want to hurt you like this? Maybe a former employee? An old business partner?"
Hideo looks away. After a while, he replies, "There are enough people who dislike Warcross and the Neuralink. Not everyone appreciates the new. Many fear it."
"It's ironic that Zero fears it so much, then," I reply, "but uses his own knowledge of technology to try to stop you."
"He doesn't sound like someone who bothers with logic."
"And what about Ren? You should disqualify him from the games immediately. It's pretty clear that he's involved with his plan. He might even be involved with potentially harming you. What if the file I saw today had been meant for him? What if he had somehow sent a signal from within the game to the person who tried to attack you?" Hideo pauses for a moment at that, before finally shaking his head.
"He's been a reliable source of information. And he might lead to more clues. If I remove him now, it'll be obvious to Zero that we know about him. They might suspect you."
I sigh, wishing I could argue with that reasoning. "Why don't you want to leave Tokyo? You could have died today." Hideo looks at me. His eyes reflect the light of the fire.
"And signal to Zero that he's won?" "No. If his entire plan is just a threat against me, then I'll be relieved."
Our conversation fades into silence. I struggle to figure out something to say, but nothing that comes to mind seems appropriate. So I just end up staying quiet, prolonging the awkwardness. My eyes wander back to the shelves, and then to the portraits on the walls. There are photos of Hideo as a child and a teen, helping out in his father's shop, reading by the window, playing games, posing with a bunch of medals around his neck, smiling for early press photos as he first hit the news wires. Curious. As a child, Hideo didn't have the silver streak in his hair or the few silver threads sprinkled throughout his dark lashes. Then my eyes stop on one particular photo. There are two boys pictured in it. "You have a brother?" I say without thinking. Hideo is silent. Immediately, I remember the warning that I'd gotten right before I first met Hideo. Mr. Tanaka never answers questions about his family's private affairs. I must request that you do not mention anything in that regard. I start to apologize, but my words fade as I realize it's something even more than that. Hideo's expression is strange now. He's afraid. I've hit an old wound. A yawning abyss, thinly scarred over. After a long moment,